90.3 WLRN. Mad Cat Theaters, the Preservation Society, is performed at the South Beach Comedy Festival today, two shows only. Tickets and festival information at madcattheater.org or southbeachcomedyfestival.com. And now, Miami City Ballet season continues with the company premiere of Paul Taylor's Promethean Fire, plus Twyla Tharp's Nine Sinatra Songs and Balanchine's Scotch Symphony. Promethean Fire, hailed as a contemporary masterpiece, is set to Leopold Stokowski's orchestral transcriptions of Bach. Promethean Fire, Nine Sinatra Songs, and Scotch Symphony opens March 4th in Palm Beach and March 11th in Broward. Tickets online at MiamiCityBallet.org.
And we welcome you to the Florida Roundup on WLRN, our weekly excursion to keep South Floridians informed on local and regional news and issues affecting this community with a panel of the area's top journalists. And we welcome those journalists as follows. Today, McNelly Torres returns. She's a longtime South Florida journalist and formerly with the South Florida Sun Sentinel, now with the startup Florida Center for Investigative Reporting. She's also a board member on the Investigative Reporters and Editors Organization, and she's the first Latina to be elected on that board. And it's great to have you here, McNelly. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we'll talk more about what the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting does a little bit later on. When you think South Florida journalist, you think Jim DeFede. He's top of mind, part of the journalistic fabric in our region. He's been read on the pages of the Miami Herald, the New Times, now the Daily Beast. He's also been heard on the radio and is seen on television on WFOR, CBS4 in Miami. And it's always good to have you back here as well, Mr. DeFede.
Always a pleasure to be back.
And with us from Tallahassee is the Miami Herald's new full-time political reporter, Mark Caputo, who's been covering the early days of the Scott administration, which have certainly been interesting, and many other issues related to state and regional politics. He joins us from the studios of our friends at WFSU in the state capital, Tallahassee, blocks away from where the 2011 Florida legislative session is due to begin. Hi, Mark Caputo.
Hi, Phil Latzman.
It's your show as well. We want to hear from you along the way. Email us with your first name and location at radio@WLRN.org. That's radio@WLRN.org. You can also line up on the phones, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. You can tweet us at WLRN or join our Facebook page, the Florida Roundup on WLRN, for feedback anytime. It's a very busy news day. There are stories, in fact, breaking at this hour, which we're going to get to here at the top of the show and throughout. But before we open the forum, a first listen back at the voices heard in the news on WLRN this week.
There's a new legislature in session. There's a new governor in session. And we're changing the policies of the state. I hope that if there are some folks who are worried about some of the bills that we're working on, that it will be a civil, logical discussion.
The Constitution says that the budget is the only thing we must pass to keep government operational. And our shortfall right now, the latest revenue estimate says it's $3.6 billion short. And to preserve our state's bond rating, you've got to allow at least $1 billion in reserves. So you begin this process 4.6 billion down.
This is not a monarchy. He's not a king. This is a democracy, and that there are three co-equal independent branches of government.
They need to convince me that the taxpayers of the state, which I'm responsible for, are not on the hook for the cost overruns of that project, for the operating cost of that project, and ultimately, if that project fails, that we have to give the $2.4 billion back.
I find that tragic beyond words that the President of the United States and the U.S. Senator from Florida would not even dignify survivors by sitting down with them and having a conversation about their concerns.
In order, we heard there from new Florida Senate President Mike Caradopoulos and new Florida House Speaker Dean Cannon, and they are the new sheriffs in town as perhaps the two most powerful men in the state, leading the veto-proof majority as the legislature opens its session on Tuesday. Then Tampa-based State Senator Democrat Arthenia Joyner on the bipartisan lawsuit that failed, and also Central Florida Republican Thad Altman. They each filed against the governor due to his refusal to accept the $2.4 billion in federal funds for high-speed rail, and that is officially now been taken away from the federal government today. We'll talk more about that in a bit. And then Governor Scott on what had to be done to convince him that that was worth it. And then attorney Samuel Dubin, who represents the Holocaust Survivors Foundation, and why they plan to picket today's Miami Beach Democratic fundraiser by President Obama and Senator Bill Nelson. Since then, Nelson did respond by filing a Holocaust survivors bill that, if passes, would allow survivors to sue European firms that failed to pay life insurance claims from way back before World War II. Now, let's start off with what's going on in town today. A lot of stuff happening in town. First of all, the presidential visit, as Barack Obama visits with Jeb Bush today. Jim DeFede, they say politics makes strange bedfellows, and this will be interesting to watch.
Well, actually, it's one of the areas that that the president and the former governor have always agreed on. They've always sort of seen eye to eye on education policy. It's one of the sort of things that they have in common. And so, you know, they find common ground. And as I understand it, it was the president's idea to extend a hand to the former governor. And Jeb, always eager to talk education issues, agreed. And it's good politics for the president. It gets Jeb's name out there a little bit more as well. And it's nice for the kids at Miami Central.
Kind of ironic that he is going to be appearing on the same stage with the man that most Republicans say has the best chance of beating him next year. Jeb says he's not going to run. But Mark Caputo up in Tallahassee, is that where the similarities end as far as education is concerned? Do they have more in common than we might think?
Well, they probably have more in common, but I can't think of it at the moment. it's not only good politics makes for strange bedfellows, but good policy can make for strange bedfellows. And if you look at the state's test scores, you look what's happened with various schools improving, you look at Education Week consistently ranking Florida higher and higher in performance, education performance. Jeb Bush can make a strong claim this is as a result of his reforms. It's difficult for someone like President Obama to ignore the successes of that.
And I think it also signals that President Obama coming more to the right as a result of what happened in November. But teachers' unions, traditional enemies of Governor Bush, already crying foul about this, and they're condemning President Obama for sharing the stage with Jeb Bush this afternoon. What about the outcry from teachers on this? Do you think this is a popular move for educators, McNelly Torres?
Oh, I think it is, and I see this more as a symbolism. I mean, I think that President Obama is trying to look bipartisan. You know, he obviously cares about education reforms, huge issue, and, you know, he's coming to Florida where there has been a lot of, a lot of education reform works in past years. But teachers right now, they're very nervous. You know, many teachers are facing losing their jobs, and we hear all this merit pay, resonate constantly. So there's a lot of discontent out there.
I know being denounced by the teachers union or criticized by the teachers union is probably something the White House enjoys right now, because again, it shows what you were saying earlier, the Barack Obama's move to the center, you know, that he's not beholden to unions. That's always been the big knock against him. And teachers unions right now are not the most popular entity out there in the country.
Teachers unions are scheduled to protest to start the legislative session down here and throughout the state. The state deals with what is a $3 billion cut possibly to education, according to the budget that Rick Scott wants to present. We'll get into more legislature stuff in just a moment. But what about up there, Mark Caputo in Tallahassee? Are educators really worried? And in fact, I'll relate this quick story. I was out interviewing the mayor yesterday, and while I was waiting for him, I was talking with a couple of business leaders, head of business councils here in Miami, and they said, well, we're all for this business of, the pro-business side of the governor, but they're really worried about education and the cuts to education. Are you hearing the same thing up there?
Yeah. It's difficult to cut, $3.6 billion from the education budget and put parents' minds at ease, teacher union minds at ease, teachers' minds at ease, and the Florida Chamber of Commerce, which has said for a long time that education is of paramount importance to the state. So I imagine you're not going to see all of the cuts that Rick Scott proposed get picked up by the legislature. That said, everyone's probably going to see a bit of a reduction, and there is going to be a reform or a change to the way in which teachers are compensated and to the tenure they have.
Right. This is similar to what the bill was that passed the legislature last year but was vetoed by then-Governor Charlie Crist. Now we're talking about another teacher merit pay bill similar to that with a different name that could pass in Tallahassee this year, right?
Oh, it's teed up to pass the first week of session. Session begins next Tuesday. So you can take this one to the bank. Rick Scott will happily sign it.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup here on 91.3 WLRN, and for our listeners in the Florida Keys at 91.5 WKWM, and also online at WLRN.org. I'm Phil Latzman, the voices you hear. That was Mark Caputo from the Miami Herald's Tallahassee Bureau. As it gets set for session, we're going to talk more about state issues in just a moment as the state grapples with a major budget deficit and all kinds of other things with the new governor coming in, new legislature. Also, Jim DeFede with us here from the Miami, or I said from the Miami Herald, in an acid flashback there. How about CBS4? And McNelly Torres from the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting. By the way, I'm Phil Latzman, I think. You're invited into the conversation as well by calling us at 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. Your concise emails with first name and location included are welcome as well to radio@WLRN.org. And as long as we're here, Gary has been on with us early, and we'll see what he has to say as we'll get him in to the program. Gary in Fort Lauderdale, welcome to the Florida Roundup.
Hey, guys. Why do you suppose that Rick Scott hasn't jumped on this kill the unions bandwagon like Wisconsin, Ohio, Indiana, and, well, it's still early in the day. There's probably going to be a few more. You know, I would think he would have been very anxious to do this.
Mark, you're on top of that there. What about the unions versus Rick Scott and vice versa right now?
One, he partly has, but collective bargaining is enshrined in the Florida Constitution, and Rick Scott has said he doesn't want to see any more changes to Florida's Constitution, so there's a bit of an issue there. Also, unions aren't really that powerful in Florida. We're a right-to-work state, something that Rick Scott frequently brags about. Don't get me wrong, if there's an opportunity to stick the union in organized labor, this legislature and this governor will probably happily do it. They say it's good for business, and of course, the union folks say it's bad for the common and working man.
Is there any resonance, anything in common between what's going on in Wisconsin that we hear on a daily basis to what could happen in Florida?
Senator John Thrasher he was the former Republican leader of the Republican Party of Florida. He has filed a bill to prevent the state from automatically deducting union dues on behalf of a union. That probably wouldn't change unions very much, but it would just be another little impediment in the way in which they get their money, and therefore the way in which this liberal-leaning organization, this Democratic-leaning organization, fights his party, the Republican Party, at the ballot box.
All right, it's Mark Caputo. Again, he is in Tallahassee. Jim DeFede with us here from the Miami Herald in studio with McNelly Torres from the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting. We'll continue to take your phone calls and your emails. And when we come back, some breaking news on the rail situation and also on the Port of Miami. We'll discuss that, plus the recall. Stay with us. We're back in a moment.
Good afternoon. This is the Florida Roundup on 91.3 WLRN. We're funded by listeners like you and by Jackie Abraham Jewelers, a boutique firm where you can convert your diamonds, gemstones, and jewelry into liquidity discreetly and securely. With over 25 years' experience in the trade, located in Bay Harbor Islands. Details at 305-868-4336. The Bass Museum of Art presents a spring break art camp for children 7 to 11. Children will discover the great masters in history as they draw, paint, and more. March 14th through the 18th. Details at bassmuseum.org. Palm Beach Drama Works presents Donald Margulies' Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Dinner with Friends. Dinner with Friends centers on two sophisticated Connecticut couples who've been close friends for years and what happens when one marriage falls apart, questioning love, loyalty, and marriage in a brilliant fusion of ideas, laughter, and tears. Dinner with Friends, now on stage at Palm Beach Drama Works, 322 Banyan Boulevard, West Palm Beach. Tickets at 561-514-4042 or at palmbeachdramaworks.org.
I'm Phil Latzman. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. Your questions welcome for our panel. Email us with your first name and location to radio@WLRN.org. You can also call us at 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. Tweet us at WLRN or join our Facebook page, the Florida Roundup on WLRN. You can listen back to any portion of the program, and we will be discussing the recall election in Miami-Dade in just a few minutes. First, though, there are a couple of breaking news stories this morning. Number one is that Governor Rick Scott has said he is now going to reallocate state transportation funds to pay the full $77 million cost of a dredging project at the Port of Miami so that larger ships can enter the port. And the governor made that announcement this morning and saying the project would result in 30,000 new jobs. And so that's where some of the money is going to go for where the state is allocating. Now, the other story has to do with the federal offer of $2.4 billion in high-speed rail funding. U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood has announced that Rick Scott, the decision to reject the money has now been official, as Rick Scott has been adamant about not taking that money. It will now be given to other states. And Rick Scott, the governor of the state, who's actually here in Miami today, talked about why on CNN, why this was likely to happen this past weekend, as he drew a parallel to South Florida's Tri-Rail system to make a point about why it's not fiscally responsible.
Our taxpayers aren't going to take the risk of the cost overrun of building it. It could be $3 billion. The operating cost, we already have a train that goes from Palm Beach to Miami. Only 1/6 of the cost of operation is covered by the fares.
No way, no how.
Yeah. Pardon?
No way, no how you're going to take that money.
I haven't seen how they can do it.
All right, so Jim DeFede, it turns out that the money will go elsewhere. It'll be spent on other states. I saw already that New York, Rhode Island, everybody's got their hand in the kitty. What do you think of this decision?
It's an ideological one for Scott. I mean, this was clearly a case where Scott was looking to make points with his base in snubbing President Obama than it was about sort of thinking about what might be in the best interests of Florida. Because even every time Scott came up with a concern and saying, well, I want to, you know, what about cost overruns? What about this? What about that? And they went back to the drawing board and tried to restructure the deal in such a way as to allay Scott's concerns. Scott never really seemed interested. So you got the impression that it wasn't about his efforts to protect the taxpayers as much as it was about trying to make a point about, you know, the federal government spends too much money and just sort of get rid of it and stick it to Obama is basically what it was. Also, as I think you've got in your hands right now, you know, the PolitiFact sort of did a little fact checking on Scott's argument as it related to Tri-Rail and found it coming up somewhat short.
Yeah, I mean, now it seems like McNally is sort of a war against public transportation. At least you can kind of perceive it that way by the governor of the state. He went out of his way on CNN last weekend to call out Tri-Rail, which, as gas prices go up, is going to get more and more ridership. That's another issue altogether. But he's gone out of his way, and now PolitiFact today has done a fact check on that and found it barely true. It seems like the governor doesn't like public transportation that much, does he?
And, you know, we have horrible public transportation in Florida when you look at other states. And, you know, this is the governor who said that he was going to create 700,000 jobs. So he's just really working against all of that. And what he's claiming that it's going to cost all this money to run this Tri-Rail, you know, I read recently that the Secretary Transportation LaHood said that was baloney. I sort of agree with him.
All right, up at Tallahassee, Mark Caputo from the Miami Herald. Obviously, more concern to folks in Central Florida along that I-4 corridor, and kind of ironic, that is such an important political corridor as well, which may have put Rick Scott over the top to win the state of Florida back in November. But what's the reaction up there to this decision? I imagine anger.
Well, obviously, he got sued over it by some senators. That's the ultimate, how do we say it on the radio, F you? I don't know. The senators, as we know, lost. Just incidentally, the baloney comment was specifically leveled by LaHood at Rick Scott for the very quote that you played at the beginning of the show, which is that the state would be on the hook for cost overruns and the like. Rick Scott is right, though. Public transportation costs the public money. And he just disagrees, as you said, generally with the idea of public transportation. However, I do find a bit of an irony in that he wants to do the dredging and use state money to go dredge. Well, that shows that the port doesn't pay for itself either. Transportation doesn't pay for itself. Roads are paved and built, and right-of-way is acquired with gas tax money. Gas tax money funds a variety of other transportation projects. Last thing, you also played a clip from Arthenia Joyner, the state senator, who said this is not a monarchy. Well, that message still, to a degree, has not reached Rick Scott's ears, because he's talking about how he's going to redirect money to the Port of Miami for dredging. Well, he doesn't really have the right to do that. The legislature's job is to appropriate and determine how to spend money.
Do you think
it's
just
the executive's
maybe
job to then carry that out?
Maybe
albeit
this is
there
just
is a little gray area, but
Mark, maybe this is maybe just kind of a freshman, you know, situation here where he doesn't know how things work. And I mean, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Or I mean,
I don't know about that. Jeb also had a bit of a contempt for the legislative branch. It's something that's inherent in the executive branch, something inherent in the American political system that the three.
But most of them are inclined to agree with him, though, you would think.
Well, Jeb got sued by Tony Jennings, who was Senate president, who later became his lieutenant governor. I mean, this stuff happens. But he does seem to not understand or appreciate the level of dislike that is building against him and his policies in the legislature, and it's a Republican-led legislature.
I think it's interesting, too, that the comparison with Jeb sort of being at odds with his legislature. I think, though, that the legislature during Jeb's time, at the end of the day, was sort of deferential to Jeb in a way that I don't think they're going to be as deferential by any means to Scott. I think you know, the Senate president and the House speaker are going to say, that's very nice, Governor, and then just go and do the things that they want to do anyway.
Go ahead, Mark.
Just one quick correction to that, I think, or possible differing opinion there is, remember, Senate President Mike Haridopoulos is seeking higher office, U.S. Senate, and you're going to see him sidle more and more up to Rick Scott. Now, the rest of Mike Haridopoulos' Senate might not go along with him, and that'll present its own interesting dynamics. And Haridopoulos has had an awful 2 weeks of publicity. I've never seen a Senate president have this many missteps before he really pounds the gavel on his first legislative session.
And he's the guy, along with Dean Cannon, who really run Tallahassee right now. And as you mentioned, as an indication of that, a website has recently popped up called DirtyHarry.com, which is detailing all the things that the new Senate president has been involved in that possibly have a taint to it. What is the deal with Mike Haridopoulos, and what is already sticking?
Well, let's see. 2 weeks ago, his own rules committee formally voted to admonish him for failing to accurately and fully report all of his finances, including a consulting gig with an appliance company that does business, or better said, lobbies the legislature. In addition to that, we saw on Wednesday, Brevard Community College, his former employer, finally published a book that it paid him $152,000 to write, a very rare thing for a college teacher, almost impossible thing or never heard of thing for a college teacher to be paid, especially a community college teacher to be paid up front and not teach so he could write a book.
And there was a lot of wisdom in that book, too, wasn't there?
Yeah, yes, that's the problem. It's called Florida's Legislative History and Processes, but it sheds light really on neither, and it's really kind of a memoir and common sense advice collection from Mike Haridopoulos, like get a computer so you could run computer software.
He's officially the only Republican, notable Republican, to announce he's running against Bill Nelson next year. What about Dean Cannon? He's not running for anything, and would seem that the political motivations or aspirations would not get in the way for him.
He's not running for anything yet, but just give him time. I mean, there's blood in the water now, so you're probably going to see other Republicans soon crop up to challenge Haridopoulos. When you're a presiding officer of the Florida Senate or the House of Representatives, you could squeeze a lot of money out of donors. Remember, there's a $70 billion budget, and $70 billion in spending means there's $70 billion worth of businesses out there that are looking for money.
All right, now speaking of the budget, what are you be looking forward to? Obviously, that's top of mind for everyone as the legislative session begins next week.
You talking to me?
Yes, sir.
I don't see anyone else standing over here. I'm by myself in Tallahassee. Obviously, schools are going to be the big thing politically. The big thing financially is going to be Medicaid. Medicaid is 28% of the state's budget. It is growing because the economy is bad and more people need subsidized health insurance. You're going to see a Republican-led legislature put a more conservative stamp on that, and the results are yet to be seen.
How are we looking at this down here, McNelly Torres? What do South Floridians want to see happen in Tallahassee?
Well, they want them to go to work and help the economy because we are still going through a recession. And everybody is very worried about the cuts. How is that going to affect them? You know, whether it's education, whether it's Medicaid, you know, all the cuts is going to affect people.
Jim, what are the most interesting stories you see coming out of Tallahassee this year?
The relationship between the governor and the legislators. I mean, I think that's always a dynamic. I mean, it's to me, the story is, I mean, we've sort of taken for granted that he's been governor for a couple of months, but it is that sort of Rick Scott goes to Tallahassee moment, and to see how this how this somewhat interesting character, I think that's a polite way to describe it, how he navigates around in Tallahassee, and is he able to put his imprint up there, and what sort of lasting effect it'll have.
There's one major disagreement between, by the way, Herodopoulos and Rick Scott, and the Pill Mill story has gotten a ton of attention down here. In fact, the federal government's talking about it, everybody's talking about it, we've all reported on it in different ways, but apparently Mike Herodopoulos is committed to getting that database to track the prescription drugs in working order, while the governor still remains against that, calling it an invasion of privacy. It's been interesting to watch. This is the Florida Roundup you're listening to here on 91.3 WLRN. And...
Oh, can I also mention one other thing?
You interrupted my reset. The program director is not going to be happy with that. Yes,
I did. And of course, I'm fascinated to find out if we'll finally outlaw sex with animals.
We never will.
Mark says no. All right, that's Mark Caputo up in Tallahassee, by the way. We have Jim DeFiti and McNelly Torres here in our studios in Miami. I'm Phil Latzman. You're listening to the Florida Roundup. Good to have you, and we're going to move on to some local issues, including the recall, which I've done some extensive reporting on this week. But before we do that, let us talk with Jack, who has been waiting in Key West. Jack, welcome to the Florida Roundup, and how's Key West today?
Good. How are you today?
Good. What's on your mind?
I was just curious, you know, when they talk about this $3 billion cut in education funding in the state, is that somewhere along the line, someone has to pick up the tab. I mean, they talk about, I mean, if you ever look at how funding goes for education, recently a New York Times article came from the World Bank, and it rated the countries in the industrial world. And the United States ranks among the lowest on our scores for both science and math education for anybody in the free world. And the thing is that so the government feels it's important to cut that part out so we have a less competitive next generation coming into a more high competitive market just to save money to make, is it some kind of political thing he's looking at? Because it seems like the Republicans now, their attitude is that, well, what we'll do is we'll make sure everybody that got us in office gets the tax break, and but on whose back is it going to be on?
As it relates to education, yeah. Nelly Torres, why don't you take that?
This proposed $3 billion education cut translates into about $700 per student, and this means teachers' layoffs. They are going to be the ones who are going to pick up the debt. You know, school districts are already cash-strapped. They're struggling financially. The stimulus funding was a nice band-aid to the problem they are facing. So definitely people are going to lose their jobs.
Hey, Jack, we do appreciate your call. Thanks for listening down at Key West. Let's move on, though. And obviously, we've got a lot of state news. Session starts on Tuesday. We do look forward to covering that all session long on WLRN through the resources of our Tallahassee Bureau, including Mark and Marianne Kloss and all the folks with the Miami Herald that we work directly with. And certainly we'll be talking more about that as we go along. And your calls and your emails are still accepted. By the way, we should get this one in from Al, and maybe Al in Fort Lauderdale says Rick Scott probably hates the federal government because they caught his Medicare fraud. Okay. I don't know if it was worth reading or not, but, there obviously is some. And then Griggs, anybody would like to opine? This comes from Arch and Laura, who are in Fort Lauderdale. Anybody like to opine on whether Jeb Bush will, in his capacity as director of Tenet Hospital System, also discuss health care policy with the president? What do you think?
I doubt it.
Yeah,
no. Yeah. I think they stick to the education issues, and I don't know. I'm not sure how much downtime they're going to have to just sort of,
sit back and have a beer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Hey
Jeff, why don't you?
As complex as education is, I think that's a safer topic than getting into healthcare.
You
seriously,
talk about what you know, what bonds the two of you. All right, let's move on. And before we continue our discussion, let's have another listen back to the week that was, with the focus on an unexpected election that is currently taking place in Miami-Dade.
If the community wants this quality of government or lack of quality government, so be it. But I say get out there and vote yes for recall, yes for an opportunity to change the direction of this community. It's time to stop complaining and do something about it.
As soon as I recommended the budget, between the budget hearings, there's a billionaire in this community that, basically threatened commissioners.
I'm in favor of a special election. I think this.
But that's more money then.
So what? It's democracy, and the cost of these elections is inconsequential compared to the overall cost of allowing decisions to be made by this commission and by this mayor.
I don't want to run for anything else. In 18 months, I will be just a citizen, and I'm fine with that. I've made mistakes, but it was always with good intentions. I have hundreds of people that are willing to volunteer and work the polls. If somebody was doing this, it wasn't done with my approval, and it's not right.
Right there, we heard from only two people. The antagonist, Miami billionaire businessman Norman Brayman, leading the ongoing recall effort to remove the mayor of the county from office. And then the protagonist, Mayor Carlos Alvarez himself, fighting for his political life. I spoke actually one-on-one with them both over the past couple of days. You can hear the full interviews, if you wish, at WLRNMiamiHeraldNews.com. There's some good stuff there that did not make it on the air during the newscast. Now, early voting has begun on whether to recall the mayor and District 13 Commissioner Natasha Cejas. The successful drive by Norman Brayman, early voting has begun. And I'll just relate this quick story. I think I mentioned this off the air. We were at the Miami-Dade Government Center yesterday, and it was at an early voting site, and we waited for about a half hour, and we did not hear from one voter, not one voter. We went through about at least 15 to 20 people, not one in support of Mayor Alvarez. Is that surprising to hear, Jim DeFede?
It's not surprising. It's an anger vote is what it is. And it's not even entirely rational anger, as anger often is. It's often based on more feelings than it is on reality. And there's a perception out there as it relates to the mayor and the budget and what he put forth. I mean, they lose sight of the fact that I would venture to say the vast majority of people who signed the petition for the recall because of the tax increase actually saw their taxes go down. This year, 60% of folks in Miami-Dade County actually had their property taxes go down because of the budget that was approved. Of the 40% that saw an increase, it was a fairly modest increase. And it was an increase among those who like myself, have been homesteaded for a long time and have seen our property taxes kept artificially low during this entire reign of property values going high.
So did you notice it in your bill?
I noticed a tax increase, but it was sort of what you when you look at it over the span of years that I've had the house, it didn't come as a shock for me. But I just the point that I want to make is I think Norman Brayman talks about how this will change the direction of the county, and I think it will, and I don't think it's for the better. What troubles me about this is, to me, this is what elections are for. You have elections to decide course of actions, and short of some serious malfeasance, misfeasance, or some corruption in government specifically, you don't just sort of yank people out of office. And the problem is the Miami-Dade County Commission is a fairly spineless commission to begin with. They are not a very strong body. And yet they were able to do certain things that they thought were brave in terms of putting this budget forward to try to hold the line on certain things. And now, if this recall is successful, and even if it's not, I think that they're going to be so scared that they're going to kowtow to the loudest, angriest voices in the community. And I've been making the joke, and I think it's a good one. You know, whenever a piece of legislation is proposed at the county commission, there's always a line that sort of says staff recommends the following, the mayor's recommendation the following. And I think we should need to add a new line that says Norman Brayman's recommendation is the following. Because if I'm a county commissioner from now on, then on any piece of legislation that comes forward, I want to know what the billionaire thinks. Because if the billionaire is against it, well, and the billionaire is going to be angry about it, then I need to know that before I decide how I'm going to vote on a piece of legislation.
I asked him point blank, and even he admits that the whole process is fair. And he, and I'll take the counterpoint on this, says on his list of eight reforms, one of them is to make it easier for you and me to petition to recall the mayor if we want. But that sounds like anarchy.
It sounds like anarchy. It does. I mean,
like Dade County,
right? Well, and by the way, Mark may be our newest property owner down here.
You're due to come down here later this year.
Yeah, I'll come down and run for mayor, maybe. Who knows? And then I'll get recalled the next day. It'll be fantastic.
Yeah. You've heard this discussion and you know the situation. You're up in Tallahassee. You'll be coming into the maelstrom later this year. But what do you think of all this, Caputo?
Well, I got a little bit of a Tallahassee hook in that Rick Scott's pollster, a guy named Tony Fabrizio, probably one of the best, if not the best pollsters in the state and maybe the nation, had done a survey just a short while ago showing that 50% of people wanted the mayor recalled. Only 32% were in favor of keeping him. The only reason he's not complete toast is that he's only at 50%, but I just can't see a just looking at the numbers and not knowing anything else, although I knew a little else, I don't see how he survives.
Well, it was amazing yesterday. Every person, a few of them were unemployed, and obviously those people are going to come out and vote.
I mean, unless you're the county manager or one of our former colleagues who got a very nice job with him,
Not for long, though, because that position's being phased out, the county manager.
Oh, really?
Bye-bye,
six figures. But what's going to inspire you to go to the polls and vote for Carlos Alvarez? From what I've seen of him, he's a singularly uninspiring figure. One of the reasons he got elected is that he didn't look like he was basically clever enough to be corrupt.
I think that one thing is for sure in this case is that I don't think that there is malfeasance or misfeasance or whatever kind of feasance involved.
There's not enough feasance is the problem.
Yeah, there's just simply a situation, and remember, this guy was overwhelmingly reelected 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, November of 2008, won a right to be the strong mayor. And, you know, I was going through archives of tapes yesterday or this week and was listening to a bit where the President George W. Bush, was here in 2006, 5 years ago, at the Port of Miami, talking about the unemployment rate in Miami-Dade County being 3.2%. And we are now at 13.2%. So, you know, sort of in a way, he's a victim of what's just been an awful economy. Anyway,
that's what happens when you campaign for a top job. Sometimes you get held accountable, even if it's unfairly so.
But do you think that Braman is being, and Jim, I'll ask you this question. Do you think Braman's being honest about his true motives for this recall? Is he still smarting over losing the court battle over the Marlins stadium?
Oh, I have no doubt that plays a factor in it. Norman Braman isn't a man who's used to not getting what he wants. He wanted that stadium killed. He also wanted the courts to help him kill it, and he lost that fight there. And so now he takes it on to Carlson, other avenues. You know, I mean, you heard him in that clip. So be it. Whatever it costs. You know, $5 million for an election. Again, I have another alternative. I think we should change the charter. I personally think that if the mayor is recalled, then Norman should automatically become mayor. Let Braman come in, and he's got all the answers, apparently. Let him fix the budget. Let him do all the things. I think that's appropriate.
I also asked him that, and he said that it would break up his 55-year marriage.
Of course, so he doesn't want to take the responsibility of actually governing. I mean, he just wants to throw rocks at the person who does.
Yeah. It's, anyway, and here, by the way, I don't want to, in the interest of equal time, if you will, here is the ad, one of the ads that has been running that Norman Braman has been bankrolling. On this recall campaign.
With interest cost, we will pay $2.4 billion for the Marlins' new home. An average Miami-Dade family of four will be paying nearly $4,000 in taxes for the baseball stadium, many families can't even afford a ticket.
Actually,
to the
that's
game.
Sorry.
My name
what's
is up with that music?
Contreras, and this is just one of 20 reasons to vote yes to recall Mayor Alvarez.
Well, the only problem
talk
the,
over him, but
and I apologize for that. But the only problem with that is it's not Dade County taxpayers who are paying for the Florida Marlins Stadium, since the money is coming from bed tax, which is supposedly tourists coming into South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, it's I get the fact that there's anger about things. I wasn't a big fan of the Marlins Stadium either. I wish we could have figured out better ways to use that money. But I think recall is the last resort, not a whim.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens there. It seems as if it's sort of fait accompli at this point. Polls are open from 7 to 3 p.m. this week, until today, till 3 p.m., 4 hours both Saturday and Sunday, and they'll switch to 11 to 7 next week. Election day is March 15th. Your phone calls, your emails, and some other feedback when we continue the Florida Roundup in just a moment.
This is 91.3 WLRN, 91.5 WKWM's Florida Roundup. Good afternoon. We're funded by listeners like you and by FPL, constantly working to make its system stronger, smarter, cleaner, and more efficient to offer reliable service today and for years to come. Details at FPL.com. And by Oriental Rug Care, hand-washing rugs for over 20 years and dedicated to making them clean and healthy for you and your family. Pickup and delivery service available. More information at OrientalRugCare.com.
There's a small hotel.
Hilarity abounds in Plaza Suite, the Tony Award-winning Neil Simon comedy about three couples occupying a suite at New York's famed Plaza Hotel. The New York Daily News says Plaza Suite is wonderfully funny, the wildest and most uproarious farce seen on a stage. This comedy set the town laughing, says the New York Times, now showing through March 20th at the Stage Door Theater. Tickets available at 954-344-7765 or at StageDoorFL.org.
Next time on South Florida Arts Beat, join us for an in-studio performance by Ever So Clever. Join us for Ever So Clever, performing live here on WLRN's South Florida Arts Beat, Fridays at 1 o'clock.
It is the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman, and once again introducing our panel for the week. Mark Caputo is with us from our studios in Tallahassee, the headquarters of WFSU, as we get ready for the legislative session coming up next week. Also with us here in the studio in Miami is Jim DeFede from CBS4 Television, WFOR, and McNelly Torres from the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting. You can also join us in with an email, a name and location at radio@WLRN.org. You can call us at 800-743-WLRN. We'll get to the calls in just a moment, a couple of emails as well. And you can also join our Facebook page. We'd love to have you there. That's the Florida Roundup on WLRN. And by the way, my personal Twitter, I'm very Twitter active. It's PHILLATZMAN, Phil Latzman. So before our discussion resumes, I wanted to get to McNelly for just a moment, just to ask you about the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting. This is a new startup thing. You're doing a lot of very important reporting on what's going on in the state of Florida right now. Tell us a little bit about FCIR before we continue.
Yes, we are the first bilingual investigative nonprofit in the Sunshine State. And we launched in September after we got a grant from Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Mm-hmm. We cover state government. We are not here to compete with the traditional media. We are here, if anything, to work with them and collaborate with them. So we are, you know, we have experienced reporters on board, and we're working also with freelancers. As you know, there's a lot of unemployed journalists in the state as well. So we're trying to fill that void that has sort of kind of, you know, been left by the shrinking of the news and newspapers. And we understand people really want in-depth news, and we're trying to provide that. And, you know, people are responding to it.
Are you doing any of the Charlie Sheen stuff?
No.
Remember to stick to the important things, McNelly. It's FCIR.org, FCIR, the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting.org, FCIR.org.
And if you like your journalism, help us do more. Go to FCIR.org and donate.
And by the way, we work with you guys on some stories, and we hope to keep them coming. Before the discussion continues, let's have a final rendition of what it sounded like in our state and region this week.
If we can't accommodate our current population with a water supply, how on earth could we possibly expect to grow our economy, attract new residents, lure new businesses that will employ folks in the state without finding a solution to create new sources of water for those folks?
It isn't because housing prices have increased. It's because families' incomes have decreased. We're just going to have a worsening housing crisis until we get folks employed.
We really move towards a merit pay plan that I wouldn't say it satisfies everyone, but I don't think it's confrontational. I think it's inspirational, because folks are going to get paid more when they do an outstanding job.
They want the public to say, oh, yeah, teacher quality, but it's a bait and switch because it's full of unfunded mandates. And it is not the interest of children.
We're also funding Jackson to the tune of over $100 million and then some. I need to understand that I could at least look at my taxpayers, at my citizens and my constituents, and say, we're funding something that works.
All right, Kirk Fordham from the Everglades Foundation first on what completion of Everglades restoration projects could mean for the future of fresh water in the state. Jamie Ross, president of the Florida Housing Coalition, which says that 42% of South Florida households are spending more than half their income to keep roofs over their heads. That is the nation's highest percentage, according to them. Senate President Mike Haridopoulos on the new teacher merit pay bill being circulated in Tallahassee that would eliminate teacher tenure, and then the negative reaction on that from United Teachers of Dade President Karen Aronowitz. And then finally, State Representative Republican Eric Fresen of Miami demanding accountability from Jackson Hospitals if they're to receive help from state and local officials to meet an estimated $100 million shortfall. Jackson and Miami-Dade currently vetting an offer to buy JMH from a Boston-based company that would absolve them of debt and create a public-private partnership of sorts. And if we have time, we'll get into some of that. Let's take a couple of calls. Here's an email. Al from Miramar says, yes, Brayman, a great citizen, was motivated by the stadium issue, and Scott is motivated because he did not get away with his fraud. Okay, there's an opinion piece there. And Dale in Miami says, why would Rick Scott not accept the federal money for the high-speed rail when it would help travel, gas cost, and put people to work? Shame on him. Metro Rail works great in Miami. Scott is just angry at the feds over his personal problems like Medicare fraud. Again, that comes from Dale, and he is in Miami. And yesterday, actually, I took the Metro Mover in Miami for the first time in a very long time. And,
really?
And it was great. You know, all these new... And you know what's funny is it's free.
Yeah.
So you wonder... charge a couple of
it's
shekels.
It's not free. Someone picks up the tab.
Someone picks up the tab, but you know, it was a very enjoyable ride, very scenic, all through these new buildings, a canyon of buildings. I highly recommend it, but it's absolutely free. All right, we'll move on and take a couple of phone calls here. Mary in Hollywood has been waiting with us. Mary, welcome to the Florida Roundup.
Good afternoon. I just want to say I think that Jim Tafiti might be off a little bit when he talks about the recall. I work in Miami, and I know everybody who is voting is voting to recall the mayor, and I think it's more because of the arrogance. And what people talk about and remember is his giving the raises to his staff when everybody else was sort of hurting and cutting back, and it was just his arrogance about the whole thing. So I mean, I think also people feel like you're not funding things that people need, and you're funding the Marlins Stadium. I think it's people talking, then there's no other recourse, and so they went for the recall. But I live in Hollywood but work in Miami, but people are voting against the mayor to recall him. You don't hear anything about the commissioner, but the mayor, it's definitely, I think, a referendum on his arrogance. Thank you.
Interesting, Mary. Thanks. You know,
I don't think Jim ever said otherwise.
Yeah, I think that's what we all kind of pointed out.
Just to correct the caller.
But Natasha Sayhaus actually won a recall election about 4 years ago. So, I mean, there's hope, but that could be the only hope that Mayor Alvarez would have. And what about Sayhaus? You think she's done too?
Sayhaus could be more interesting. Here's my prediction. My prediction is she loses the recall, but then immediately turns around and throws her name in for the general election to win again, and will win. Because when you include, it depends on who turns out. More than likely, the angriest voters, the voters who are most motivated to want to see her removed, will turn out. But then if you put her in a general election, I thought she was
it
walking by.
It looked like Natasha Sayhaus just walked by.
It was a little scary there for
a
second.
It was weird.
But if you put her then in a general election and have the Hialeah voters turn out, she'll win. So here's my prediction. My prediction is she gets recalled, she runs, she wins her seat back, she stays for 6 months, and then tells everyone to kiss her butt and resigns on her own terms.
What a drama.
Okay. Let's talk to a teacher, Rain in Miami. Rain, welcome to the Florida Roundup.
Good afternoon. I have to hurry up and get back to class.
Oh, sorry about that.
I'm a 25-year veteran.
Okay.
And regarding merit pay, if they want to see merit, why are they cutting back the support, the financial support for a fantastic program like National Board? I am National Board certified in media. I taught PE for 14 years. I know what it is to have 81 students in a class. But I have seen what National Board process does to improve a teacher's thinking, writing, everything else. And they were supporting it very well, and they've cut it back. They would have to go to a mentor to help them go through the process. It is really good. And if you want to see reform, have it so that they're required to do it. Because by having it, I become automatically highly qualified under the Nickleby.
And now, what is what exactly is this program, Rain? It's called what?
It's not a college class. You can't just go take classes and pass and get a degree.
What's the name of the program that they want to cut?
National Board for Professional Teachers.
Okay.
I'm not saying the name right because I'm nervous.
All right.
It is really good. They have cut it back. Now the teachers have to pay $3,000 or take a loan to just apply, whereas before I got to pay something like $250.
Mm-hmm.
I went through the entire process. I have videotaped my teachers. I can tell you it is really good.
And this is money that's being threatened in Tallahassee, is what you're saying.
And this is money that has been cut back.
Okay.
SB 736 wants to take away my right to take the money I make from my salary, which comes from public taxes.
Right.
Okay. But I work for every penny of it. I want to join the union, or I don't have to, because, Mr. DeFede, you're right. We are a right-to-work state, but Florida is different. We're the only one with collective bargaining. Therefore, I can go to a union and say, please have somebody sit at the table, because these principals, I don't know what they use for criteria to get these people to become principals.
Rain, we do appreciate your call. I don't have much time. I have been running out of time here. I got a couple other things I want to get to. I do appreciate your call.
I think the message is loud and clear.
Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you. Okay.
All right. Here's an email from Martin, who says, I understand your defense of the mayor, but why would he increase salaries for certain county departments and employees?
I don't know.
I think there was a little bit of a defense as to whether this process is all worth it.
I think the process is crazy. And look, I think the pay raises to a handful of his folks was politically dumb. I got the rationale. He combined departments and cut back on administrative costs by more than $1 million and handed out, you know, $150,000 in raises, basically saying that because, you know, people were now going to take on new responsibilities and see larger departments, that they should have their salaries adjusted. It was a mistake. It was done politically. That's the problem with Carlos Alvarez, is everyone accuses him of playing politics. And the fact is, he is politically tone deaf,
right,
much to his detriment.
Right, and by the way, I was going to ask you, we didn't discuss this, and you've done some reporting on this as well, the transit workers this week that were
right, and for anyone
pulled from their jobs. Right.
And for anyone who thinks that I'm too easy on the mayor, I'm the one who exposed the fact that it was a dozen transit worker union members who were going out campaigning on county time, and the mayor has yet to sort of shut that down, and he should shut that down. But as of right now, so far, it's still going on.
He claims that he didn't know anything about it, and that
which
it,
I believe, actually.
Which, I
tend
to do
it. Probably why
too.
He should be recalled if he doesn't know what his employers are doing.
If your transit workers, part of a union, decide to put on T-shirts and campaign for, you're talking about a huge bureaucracy. I don't know if that the mayor of the county would know necessarily that that's going on. I think this call would be for Mark, who's up in Tallahassee. Alex in Coral Springs, quickly, if you could summarize for us on what you wanted to ask.
Yeah, it'll be quick. I'm on my lunch break. But I just had a question. You know, all I hear from you guys out there, from the press, is how the governor said no to the money that Obama was going to give.
How would high-speed rail be paid long-term? Let's ask Mark Caputo that question.
Because the way that I see it, the problem with the traffic is local traffic. Right. I don't really think that there's a problem between the connection between Miami and Orlando.
Okay, thanks, Alex, for the call. I'm sorry we're running out of time. But does that argument hold water, that there's not enough population density here to make it work?
Martin. Well, it does to a degree. The tickets would be very expensive to ride the bullet train. However, there was a belief that there should be a request for proposals, have businesses come back, and if a business said, look, we'll shoulder all the risk, then it should be sent out to bid. Rick Scott never let that happen.
And McNally Torres, what are you working on at FCIR quickly that we can read?
Well, we're working on project on education and also looking at some stuff in the criminal justice system.
And you'll be doing a lot of monitoring of what's going on in Tallahassee over the next session.
Definitely.
Mark Caputo will be watching over all the things happening at the legislative level over the next couple of months. You'll hear more of him. Mark, thanks for coming in and doing this with us from Tallahassee. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you.
And Jim DeFede with CBS4, always a wonderful day to have him here and opining and talking and analyzing like no one else here in town. Jim, always good to have you as always.
Thank you, Phil.
And that'll do it for the Florida Roundup, Friday, March the 4th, 2011. If you missed any portion of the show, I recommend you go to the Facebook page we have, the Florida Roundup on WLRN later. We're also going to post it at WLRNMiamiHeraldNews.com. We're produced by Alicia Zuckerman, assistant producer Ariana Prothero, executive producer Peter J. Meritz, technical supervision from Bonnie Berman. South Florida Arts Beat is next. Tune in next Friday and at this time for the next edition of the Florida Roundup. Until then, I'm Phil Latzman. Stay informed, South Florida.